So Dr. Linda Frisman is our next speaker, and she is a senior scientist, research scientist, at the Connecticut Department of Behavioral Health and Addictions. Is that okay? But she's also a professor at the University of Connecticut in the School of Social Work. And thirdly, and very important, is she's an honoree this year in our mental health section as the recipient of the Steve Banks Mentoring Award. And this is really important because she has given her talent and her time to young folks that are coming up in the field, and we really want to support people like Linda who are willing to give their time and talent. Thank you.
Feels like I just keep getting this award over and over again. That's great. Our talk is about understanding homeless shelter users, and we're looking at the overlap with the criminal justice system and the behavioral health system. And I want to acknowledge two of my co-authors here in the audience. Lenny, raise your hand. Lenny Rodas and Sharu Lin. And I'm hoping that they will help me fill in any gaps that I have in my memory here. Why isn't it going? Oops, that's really the wrong way. I don't want to give away the answer. There. No disclosures. Our other author is Fran Martin from Solutions for Community. A lot of you may know her because she, for years, was with the Corporation for Supportive Housing and more recently was serving as the interim director of the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness when we were doing the study. So a little background about this study. This all started about 5 years ago when Connecticut got interested in applying the model that was being developed by the Corporation for Supportive Housing called the Frequent User Service Enhancement. Some of you who work in homelessness have probably heard about this. It's a matter of trying to identify people who are costing the system a lot and who are homeless and try to some of them are not homeless, but most of them are homeless people. And several sites around the country have tried to focus services on this group because they hit multiple systems at once. We developed in Connecticut an interagency committee that included representatives from the homeless area, from behavioral health, and from the criminal justice area. And we decided that we were going to focus mainly on shelter users who had frequent jail episodes. And specifically, we wanted them to people who had high numbers of days in the shelter and also frequent jail admissions rather than long periods in jail. Those were the groups that we were looking at. And we ended up getting data together and examining the cross-system service utilization by homeless people for that effort. And also, our interagency committee got housing vouchers and created a supportive housing model specifically targeted to people who were in the very highest levels of that cross-system utilization. And after we've been doing this for a while now, this program is underway and is being evaluated. Lenny Rodas is the principal investigator of the evaluation. We're getting more curious about the behavioral health overlaps. We originally didn't include the behavioral health data in looking at high service utilization, which may sound a little odd, but partly it was because there was a lot of sensitivity actually by the homeless service providers in sharing the data with the state agencies. So we were sort of with the state agency because we're based at DEMIS, but we're also UConn faculty research people who don't share our information with DEMIS. So we promised them that we would just do this with the DOC data, and they were a little more comfortable with that. They were concerned about what would happen if we shared the data. Since that time, they've become a little more easygoing about this, and they've gotten used to the effect. And actually, Sharu and I and Eleni have done so much cross-system data matching over the past several years. And it's one of the things that we found is it's really hard at first. You have to get each agency sort of used to the idea that you know what you're doing and be comfortable with this. And after, over time, now we go back to them and they're totally used to our doing this and they know what to do. And the more you do it, the easier it is. So we were then curious about the behavioral health, so we decided to do these analyses. And particularly, we're concerned about the impact of the criminal justice and behavioral health systems on homeless shelter use. So that was one of our particular reasons for doing this study. So we had three sources of data. The Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness actually maintains the Homeless Management Information System for Connecticut. And we used all their cases that appeared in that system from 2010 to 2012. And it covers all the shelters that report to our Department of Social Services, except for New Haven. We had to separately append the New Haven data because they send their data directly to DSS, so we added that too. Except some of these analyses, we don't have some of the New Haven data in them, but the percentages should be roughly still true. And it amounted to just over 25,000 cases. And for, you know, so no, we're not looking at people who don't fall in that shelter system. We are only looking at that 25,000 people. We attached the DOC data, and we looked at originally all their 65,000 records for that time period, that three-year time period, and pulled out the people that matched. And then we looked at all the DEMIS data, which includes both mental health and substance abuse services in the public and in the nonprofit sector. There's lots of nonprofits who get funding from DEMIS, so it's actually a very comprehensive look at behavioral health services in Connecticut. And there were 192,000 people in there, and we pulled out just the people that overlapped. And we used the common identifiers of name, social security, gender, date of birth, and race to do the match. So data matching, I can provide more information about this at the end if anybody's interested, but and I also showed this same slide 3 years ago when I was doing our original presentation on FUSE, so some of you may have seen it before. Linking is a program that's publicly available, developed by Kevin Campbell, and uses both probabilistic linking and deterministic linking. So in other words, these aren't necessarily exact matches. Probabilistic linking is really important to use when you're using multiple systems of care, and when you have some of the data that you're getting are from systems like homeless shelters, where you know that there are going to be a lot of errors, especially in the Social Security number, date of birth, things like that. So you have to use ways of matching things, sort of. And there are sort of different levels that you can accept it. And also, of course, the ones that are exact matches were included in there. And, you know, we really love using the linking program because it does have this capacity. And it uses both phonetic equivalents of names, things like that. So there's a lot of little tricks that it uses. And it has a very friendly interface. So this is our results in terms of our overall overlap looking. So this is, think of this as the total shelter population of 25,000 people. And the gray wedge in that pie are people who only appeared in the shelter system during that time. The people in that little tiny top mustard colored wedge appeared in the shelter plus in the DOC system. And one of the big surprises, actually, sort of, was how small that was. Very small, but then you have to sort of think about why that is. So if you look at the bottom, the maroon one, those are people who were in the shelter and the DOC and behavioral health. So part of the reason that the mustard one is so small is because where people are, you know, the people who come out of the DOC are also represented in the Department of Mental Health system. So it's because just by itself, being in prison is not so much a risk for being homeless, apparently, but being in DOC and being having a behavioral health disorder probably is. Now, I'm talking as if this is causality. This is a chicken and egg issue. I should never say it this way, but of course, we always make those leaps in our head. So I'm letting you know I make that same mistake, but don't you make that mistake. And the blue wedge are the people who are in the shelter in the behavioral health system, but not in the DOC system. So you get a sense of like just how big the, you know, the 45% is shelter only. You know, we think of this as being maybe more overlapping than it is in some way. But on the other hand, there's a lot of overlap. And that's very important. Okay. So now the first thing I wanted to do in terms of understanding these groups better was to look at diagnosis. Now, we don't have diagnosis for people who are in shelter only. We don't have diagnosis for people who are in the DOC only, but we do have two groups with diagnosis because we get it from the mental health system. And that's you know, the people who are in the behavioral health system in the shelters and people who are in the DOC and the behavioral health system. So that's the one on the right. So what this shows us is that there are two, it actually doesn't show it, but I can tell you that if you look on the right side, the people who are in the substance abuse only group and the dual diagnosis group, so people who use substances, are much more represented in the DOC plus behavioral health side. So that's not really surprising. But we were interested also in the number of people who have serious mental disorders. So the very top level there are people who have serious mental illness only, and the third one down is the dual diagnosis, but that's dual diagnosis, dual and serious mental disorder. So there's a lot of people who have serious mental disorder, and by serious mental disorder I mean schizophrenia, bipolar, or major depression, basically. The others that are on the bottom are mainly anxiety disorders, including a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. We also want to just look at some of the characteristics by the groups. And so first we looked at the gender, and I'm not showing you the significance levels here, but we see, I can tell you that the behavioral health shelter only and the behavioral health plus DOC both had significantly more males than either of the other two groups, the group that had DOC only, I'm sorry, I should have said the DOC only and the... both the DOC groups had significantly more males, obviously, than the other two groups, which is not terribly surprising because that's what the criminal justice system looks like. Then we looked at the race and ethnicity by group, and all of these are significantly different. The largest group, because it's broken down by white, black, Hispanic, and other, the largest group is different in each one. There are more whites in both the behavioral health and the behavioral health plus DOC groups, and the shelter and the shelter plus DOC groups both have more African Americans overall. In terms of the age by group, the behavioral health only is the oldest group, and that's the only significant effect here. So behavioral health people tend to be older. The percent veterans, now I want to caution you that these data are not terrific. We're not sure how reliable it is. This is asking one question, are you a veteran at the time of shelter intake? It's the only place we really got it from. And that's not great data. We know that people define veterans as different things. Some people want to mask being a veteran. Some people want to say they're veterans when they're not. But it is what it is. And so I'm going to show you, but give you the caveats that we're not sure that it's exactly right. But in this group, we did see that the ones that have no overlap are less likely to be veterans than the other three groups. And again, and this isn't too surprising. We saw that the percent male was higher in the other groups. And so this no overlap group, it's really showing how this is mostly the homeless families, the women of homeless families, because these are all adults. But it's not surprising that they are not veterans. The same thing for disabled, well, almost the same thing for disabled. The no overlap group is low. Also, the DOC only group doesn't have as much disability, which is not surprising because they're not in the mental health or addiction group. So it's not too surprising. Now we get into the somewhat more interesting parts. We wanted to understand how these groups were dividing their time in their past 3 years, how many days were spent in different settings. And of course, we don't have all their days because they don't spend all their days homeless. But we do have days information on their days in shelters, in DOC, and in mental health settings or substance abuse settings. So for the group that have no overlap, obviously all their days are just in the shelter. And on average, over those 3 years, they spend 50 days in the shelter. And all of these, you'll notice, have pretty large standard deviations. Some of them have whopping standard deviations, which isn't too surprising either. If you do a lot of this kind of work, you see that kind of thing often. But still, the averages are helpful. So the people who had an overlap just with a behavioral health system, they had an average of 62 days in shelter and almost 70 days in the hospital or residential days for mental health. For people who had the DOC lap only, they had an average of 37 days in shelter and 280 days in prison. So that is very large, but also very large standard deviation there, so a lot of variability. And the people who had both behavioral health and DOC spent an average 40 days in shelter, 254 in DOC, and almost 90 in the hospital and residential. So again, when they're in DOC, they're in for a really long time, which you think would give us lots of opportunity to do planning with them. Now, the next thing I want to turn to is the question that we really had that's probably the most important, which is, are we doing something to create homelessness in either the criminal justice system or in the mental health system? So for this analysis, what we did was we looked at people who had at least three months from the beginning of the three-year time period. So we wanted to make sure we were giving a three-month lead so that we could look at the 3 months prior for everybody that we had in this sample. And first of all, we looked at people who have behavioral health overlap only, so in the mental health system. And we see that there are 734 people who had been released from the hospital or residential services in that 3 months before they got admitted to a shelter. So that's not a huge percentage, but it's still significant that we see there's a chunk of people who are just released in that group. And also, there were the other group we looked at, we wanted to find out about people whose care had been interrupted. Now, this is a really big concern. You know, people are in outpatient care, they're connected to our services, and then they disappear, they stop coming. We failed to outreach to them. And so those people, very similar number, a little over 9%, ended up in shelters. For the people who had just the DOC overlap, there was 21% people who ended up in this group that were in just before, 3 months before the shelter admission. And for both, there is a very high number for the people who had been released from DOC and had behavioral health, at 22%, and then 15 and 14% of people who were released from the hospital or released or just disappeared from outpatient care. So there's a big effect, apparently, in terms of both being released from prison, especially if you have a behavioral health disorder, or if you are getting out of the hospital. Now, the other huge caution I have to say is, remember, this is only the people where there was an overlap. You can't look at this from the perspective of, you can't say, oh, 15% of the people from the hospital are going to be homeless after we let them out. This isn't them. This is just the people who have any overlap. So you can't look at it from the DEMIS perspective, really just from the shelter perspective, that, you know, you might think of it more as when people come into the DEMIS system and they have a history of homelessness, then you know that they're going to be very highly likely to become homeless again after they get out of the hospital or after they are released from outpatient services. So this is just another way of looking at it. This looks, the large pie is the overall population. So you see how 19% of those people were coming out of the DOC or from DEMIS. And it breaks it down by where they came from. So out of that 19%, we have almost a third each from the hospital or residential programs, from interrupted outpatient care, or from the DOC. So it's a sizable group. And then we looked a little bit at the time to shelter admission after release. So now we're looking at back to looking at the overall group, this is not just, this is just the three-month group, right, Sharu? It's looking at those people. We have the 221 people who had a shelter admission who had been in DOC, and the number of days till they actually ended up in the shelter was 17. Actually, the days is kind of more interesting than the population size because you've looked at that before. In the behavioral health plus DOC overlap, it took 21 days, and overall it was 20.64 days. And I'm just show you a little survival curve. It really is, quite striking. Like within a day, you have 20% of that population is in the shelter. So lots of people walk out of DOC and walk into the shelter. That's one of the things we were looking for. And in the more mental health side, we see that for the behavioral health overlap only group, the amount of time it took them to the shelter was about 17 days, so it's not really that much better. And with the overlap group, again, it's about 17 days. So it's about the same kind of in both of those two overlapping groups. And this isn't quite as fast, but it's pretty fast that they get into shelters after getting out. So let me make some summary comments. There is a significant overlap in the homeless behavioral health and the DOC populations, obviously. And the shelter-only group is made up of fewer males, and the shelter and DOC groups are mostly African Americans. Most of the DOC overlap also overlaps with a behavioral health system, and most of the behavioral health populations that are also in the DOC, and they have substance abuse disorders or co-occurring disorders. Let me just say something. I think that was something I've been mulling over more than anything, because a lot of times we think of the DOC as doing a bad job in terms of reentry, and they of course do a bad job because they're mainly experts in custody and not in programming, and so when people leave there, they're mostly not under their care or being helped in any way. But I think that maybe we've done a disservice here, because it looks like their people are mostly our people in mental health. And so it seems like maybe the people on the mental health side need to take better care of the people who are also in DOC to keep them from becoming homeless, rather than pointing fingers at the DOC. I think that's my main takeaway point. And I sort of came to this when I was going over my slides again. And, of course, there's also a practical aspect to it, which is that we're much better at providing services in the community than the DOC is. And luckily in Connecticut, we have a better funded mental health system than most states do. And so they've been very generous about trying to think about the overlap with the criminal justice population and providing more of these services. So the rest of these are mostly just summaries, except for the point about the critical time intervention. I wanted to throw that in as our light in the tunnel, that one of the things we haven't used well yet is critical time intervention kinds of techniques. And I think doing more around engaging with people when they're coming either out of the hospital or out of DOC. Sometimes we don't know that they're coming out of outpatient care, unfortunately. But doing a better job at engaging with them and making sure that period, that transition period, is connecting people to both care and to housing. So that's about it for our most important thing. But thank you very much.